How are you?
Yeah, good, brother. How you doing?
What part of the world are you in now? It's like you're the globe-trotting bandit.
Yeah, I'm back in London now.
Wonderful.
But I really wanted to talk to you because some things, you know how the universe works, man. I think we talked about this before. You know, I was really wanting to set up a community, you know, and like set up a real like media sort of entity, you know, proper studio, proper, you know, like everything. Anyway, yeah, I went back to Hawaii last month, and when I landed there, I was just like, man, this is my fucking home.
It's beautiful. I mean, how could you not want to be there?
It's just that it's America, you know. That's the thing that took me away, and it was right that I left. I mean, I
Yeah.
did leave 2 months after 9/11, and I'm sure I would have ended up in prison for some bullshit if I had stayed. So,
Yeah, you tend to rub people the wrong way. I don't know where you get that from.
my only protection now is, you know, enough people know about me where, you know, there's a little bit of a liability if they want to try and start any bullshit
Yeah,
with me. And
make a martyr out of you.
yeah, that's it, and there you go. That's the best you can do, really, once you reach a
Well,
certain point.
when you told me that you were in Gaza, and I'm watching all these videos, and I'm like, shit. You know, and then all the fucking stuff started like literally a week after that. I
I
was
know.
like, I hope to God he's not still there.
That's the second time that's happened, you know.
Really?
I was there in August 2008. Actually, September 2008, I left. And I only left because my wife was pregnant with our first child, and I came back, and I just got back in time because the baby was 2 months early. But Operation Cast Lead, which was the slaughter they did for that was just 2 months later. So I just missed that one, and then this one, same thing. I left, and they did it again. I hope it's not me. I don't think it's.
No,
I think
no.
it's the elections.
Yeah, it's like rooting for your favorite team or something. It's nothing to do with how much you root for them. It's either going to happen or not.
So anyway, man, I don't think I talked to you about this, but
Yeah,
I
it's
did
been a
talk.
long time since we've talked, so.
It's been a while. I'm a Hawaiian national. I think I might have forwarded you my film
Yeah,
about
I think
Hawaii.
you told me they're looking to create their sovereignty and you're a part of that.
Well, they it's
And you gave me the
pretty
whole history because I honestly don't know, being a publicly educated indoctrinated slave, I didn't know how Hawaii came into under our power. We didn't there wasn't a war and there it is, the 50th state or whatever,
Yeah, no, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. Even many Hawaiians don't know, to be honest. But anyway, yeah, I'm a Hawaiian national. You know, I've actually served in the government there, and it's not like a secession movement. It was a nation. It was stolen. It was admitted to, and they're actually exercising their perfect right. And that it just so happens as I am going back, they're finally, after being reinstated 13 years ago, they are reclaiming national lands. And that process means that Hawaiian nationals, myself included, are going to be allocated half acre plots of land. Well, I've never owned.
Yeah, in Hawaii of all places in the world,
Yeah. I've never owned property, real estate in my life, but now I'm here we go. I'm getting my plot of land, and you know, I'm good friends with the Prime Minister and others in the government and whatnot. So
Ken, tell me how I get like the whole sovereign man movement, individuals saying, I the United States government's a corporation, I declare my sovereignty. There's a fine line between being technically or morally right and then the reality of the feds going, well, you may see it that way, but we still have all the guns and taxes and we're going to do things opposite. So how is that affecting this thing? Because like the Lakota Nation has declared their sovereignty. They've gone before the UN and stuff like that. And it, like the same thing with, I guess, Hawaii would be on the same level. The Lakota have said, okay, we're no longer part of you. The UN says, you know, you have to have your own set of laws, your own currency, and your own banking system for us to even do that. And for the federal government to say to the Lakota Indians, no, you're wrong, and here's our guns and taxes to prove that you're wrong, there's just such a bad PR, I guess, that they're better off just ignoring them and not doing anything about it, those people up there. How would that be different or similar to what you guys are experiencing with the Hawaiian thing?
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, if we do what we're capable of doing, then the PR associated with them making the obvious move that they would make, i.e., you know, okay, so we all go on to the land and we start building on the land. Okay, what are you going to do? You're going to physically drag people off the land, or are you going to do like Israel and bulldoze homes?
Yep.
Dwellings, okay. Hey, we can't stop you. You have to accept that. I mean, you can do whatever you want to do. There's no question of that. But you know, it's like classic martial arts. You know, you sucker your opponent into making that move,
and
knowing
use their energy.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's the way I see it. Now, what I'm doing on my end is making. I'm already making plans. Actually, I'm already put a written proposal to the Prime Minister saying, look, can we please allocate a couple acres or more of land? And I've been looking into earth bag building. I've been trying to figure out...
earth ships, you know, that they use the sun's rays and warm up and filter water and all sorts of stuff. And it's pretty cheap to do. And it's really, you know, the natural way of building structures.
Yeah. Not only, and it's like you can have a beautiful home. It's not like you're living in a mud hut.
Cave, yeah.
Yeah. Really beautiful. And I've looked at it and it's just the universe. It's all coming together. It's like, fuck, there you go. And not only that, but the earth bag buildings, you know, where you fill your bags with earth, you know, lava rock, crushed lava rock is perfect because it's got a lot of air pockets in it, so it's lighter. You mix that either with a little bit of cement or clay soil, and that will make it solid. You wet it and then fill your bags, and that shit wets down. You put you've got a fucking perfect home, man. You do that with plaster, and you can do whatever you want. And it's incredible insulation-wise, both thermally and sound. So for a studio, perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. Yeah. You can make windowless studio, you know. And bam, you know, we've got a
and it's defensible too.
That's how they started.
Yeah.
The military use them for fucking defensive positions.
Yep.
Hey, so yeah, if you're ducking bullets, man, good place to be inside.
Yep.
Which you'd think all the fucking survivalists and all the bits would be into this.
Yeah.
So as I'm looking at this, it's like, holy shit, this, first off, I couldn't afford land. Well, there you go. I'm getting land.
Yep.
Second of all, I can't afford to buy the materials. Ah, there you go. I can afford that.
Yep. This is what we're all going to have to get back to, because there's going to be such a disruption in, you know, commerce and energy, and things aren't going to be as cheap. Like right now, we're exploiting the fuck out of this world because of all the debt and you know that's created, and it's caused this mass activity of humanity of raping the earth for all of its natural resources. And when the dollar dies and all the currencies dies and the demand dies and all, like, what else are we going to be able to do but live more sustainably and more peacefully and more, like, you're not going to be able to keep up that hyper insanity that we've been doing. And yeah, I mean, the next consciousness, the next evolution of man has to be more sustainable, and housing like you're describing, and you know, I'm sure you're going to go into you know, the community building and all that other stuff is going to be you know, necessary for survival, much less being a better way of living.
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect. It's leadership by example as well. It's, hey, you know, this is, we got some serious housing issues in this world. And, you know, a lot of people who are homeless and, you know, in rural areas and whatnot, this is a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but it's completely sustainable. It's intelligent. Everything about it is perfect.
I think the big thing that ultimately, if you can do, whenever you get to do this, really make it systemized, because you know, show people how to do certain parts of it and come up with designs and plans and problem solving. Like, I saw a whole group of guys that used rocket stoves to actually heat the landmass around it. So I guess they were in a colder area, and the rocket stove used very little fuel, and it burned the smoke, and you know, it did like multiple things. It did the aquaponics. It helped, you know, it did a lot of great stuff in there. And I think like the people that really kind of get the idea out there for individuals to do it, and so they can go, okay, I watched a couple of these videos, I think I can do that, you know, like. That I think would be a great gift to humanity, because they're, you know, quite honestly, if you think about it, the major urban areas are going to be completely unsustainable. You know, they can't continue to live like that. It's going to be too dangerous, or you know, there's just not going to be enough energy to do that. So if we can get people to kind of get their minds wrapped around it and see that, yeah, it's not cave dwelling. It's actually fun. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm so excited about it. It's not even funny. And I mean, you know, my position is a great position. You know, I'm friends. I'm very close to the government, and they're reclaiming on one island 5,500 acres they've identified. So, you know, we've got a community
of lands. What gives them the authority? Like, you know, the guy you say you're talking to, a prime minister. Like, who? Yeah. Like, what's the lineage of power structure? Because like, I've talked to guys who are like, oh, we're the representatives of the true U.S. government, you know, and
yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, you're a bunch of guys who think you are, but
yeah,
you know, what's their lineage, or what's their claim to
I'll
power?
I'll give you the shortest version, because I know you don't have you know, a ton of time here.
Yeah.
But it's fairly simple. We have to understand first off that in 1893, Hawaii was a fully sovereign nation. It had embassies and ambassadors all around the world. It had treaties with 20 different nations, including 5 different treaties with the United States, one of which was a treaty of friendship, commerce, and navigation. The Hawaiian flag to this day has the Union Jack on it, because it was actually a protectorate of England as well. So we have to understand that Hawaii, and the reason why, a large part of the reason why they made sure to establish their nation, was they saw colonialism coming. They saw what it was doing to all the other Polynesian islands and elsewhere. So they knew if they had any chance of preventing this, that it was to establish their nationhood. So they did this. Now, when Hawaii was overthrown, the government was overthrown in 1893, it was ultimately annexed 5 years later. The annexation was totally illegal, because, one, in order to annex, first off, you need to have – annexation is different from military conquest.
Okay.
Annexation requires that the indigenous population consent. If they don't consent, then it's not an annexation. That's what you call a military conquest. You're forcibly taking the land.
Yes.
America doesn't claim that. It says it annexed it. It tried to annex it 5 years after the overthrow in 1898, couldn't do it. They needed a two-thirds majority. They couldn't get it, to the credit of some of the people who were in government at that time. Then guess what? The USS Maine happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We went into the war with Spain. Mm-hmm. And they still didn't have enough votes, so they reintroduced it as a joint resolution, which only required a simple majority. But according to U.S. law, that's not sufficient to annex land. So anyway, the annexation of Hawaii was done with a joint resolution in the direct aftermath of the USS Maine, but also the Hawaiians had a petition at that time, which they circulated around the islands, and virtually every single Hawaiian signed it in opposition to the annexation. So the overthrow was illegal, the annexation was totally illegal, so therefore statehood was totally illegal. Now, what's really important is that on the 100-year anniversary of the overthrow of the Kingdom of Hawaii, mm-hmm. the U.S. government passed a law, Public Law 103-150. In that law, it acknowledges many things. It's about 28 paragraphs, but there's two paragraphs that are of key importance. One paragraph says that the United States government, agents of the United States government, conspired to overthrow the indigenous and lawful government of Hawaii. Okay, so
they said this.
This is passed by the Congress,
yeah.
Signed by Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
The other thing that they admitted in this, and there's other really important details in here, but I'm giving you the two most.
Thank you.
The second one was that the Hawaiian people never relinquished their claims to their inherent sovereignty nor title to their national lands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I read about this, I said to myself, why the fuck did they do this? I mean, there's obviously a reason. I know America well enough to know.
Yeah, that they got something going on.
What's the fucking angle, man?
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason why they did it was that if you admit, according to public international law, if you acknowledge a crime and the victim does not respond to seek remedy, then after a certain amount of time, in this case, the stolen property, you will obtain the stolen property through tax consent and take, quote, adverse possession.
Yeah, so it's like sort of like if you're two ranchers and one rancher puts a fence on your property for a decade and you don't lay claim to it, then that guy just takes your property, right?
It's exactly the same thing.
Okay.
So the reason why they did that was, you know, just cocky, racist, whatever. And they knew that the only real claimant to this confession, this was a confession. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is in writing. This isn't just in writing. This is the Congress of the United States signed by the president,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
you don't
know
better than that, man.
Yeah.
And so they did this, and they knew that the only real claimant would be the Hawaiian government. Well, the Hawaiian government was in suspension. It wasn't extinguished.
Yeah.
It was suspended. It didn't actually ever forfeit any of its rights. That was acknowledged in the law itself. So what happened was the Hawaiians, many of them just were emotional and stupid and like, okay, we want our land back. Well, who are you?
Yeah.
You are an American citizen of Hawaiian ancestry bitching about a crime that you have read about.
Yeah.
But according to law, whether you like it or not, you were naturalized as an American citizen and you have Hawaiian ancestry. That's all you are.
Yeah.
You're more than that. So, but many of the Hawaiians, or some of the Hawaiians, the ones that I'm aligned with, realize, well, in order for us to respond, we have to put back our government.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that? There's a process. International law makes it very clear. There is a process, and what you need to do is reinstate your government. So how do you do that? Well, first off, you have to go to Hawaiian Kingdom law. They had laws and a constitution. They were a constitutional monarchy, so you have to look at your own laws. What are the requirements of your own law? Okay, well, what was in place in 1893? You need to reestablish that. What did they have? They had 24 districts in the nation of Hawaii, and each district had a noble and a representative. So what they did was they realized, okay, we need two Kanaka Maolis, two Hawaiians from each district to stand up as the noble and a representative. And once we can get them all together, we will officially reinstate the government. But as soon as we reinstate the government, what they did, and this was March 1st or March 13th, 1999, mm-hmm. once we reinstate, because we haven't, you know, we haven't affected the sanction of the citizens and we haven't even established our citizenship base, we'll immediately suspend our powers.
Mm-hmm.
We'll reinstate, suspend our powers, conduct a citizenship drive to identify our citizens. Those citizens will have to renounce their U.S. citizenship and then officially put their hand up, swear under oath, I'm a Hawaiian national, and all of those documents that were acquired in repatriating citizens were forwarded to the State Department of the United States, and legal notice was served in the newspapers and to the government. All of this is verified, documented stuff.
Hey, yeah.
There's a lot of process here.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so they did. How many
people did they get to do that originally?
The numbers were fairly small. I think, you know, a couple thousand or something to start. Keeping in mind that the renouncing of U.S. citizenship was the big one,
mm-hmm.
because most of the jobs here are either linked to the military or to, you know, the government in some form of tourism, even, you know, all of that stuff. It's, you know, you renounce.
Yeah. You're like
soon.
You.
You know, it comes with consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there was a need for that. They needed the integrity and the purity.
Which, by the way, will become very easy to do when the dollar collapses. Like, so many people – I mean, I talk to people who are in the military. I talk to government – like, there's people who don't like anything that's going on, but because their reality is attached to that reality, they put up with it. They suck it up. They do that. But I tell you what, the moment this stops coming through – I think you're going to have secession movements, and because people are going to be like, you know what, I'm going to do what's right for me, and so this is just leading edge stuff. So,
yeah, Yeah, no, absolutely. They bought people with the money, and that's where we have to acknowledge our own complicity in all this bullshit.
Yep.
You know, we've been bought off, whether we want to admit it or not. You know, we got a little too comfortable, and therefore we're willing to put up and tolerate this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this is what they've done, and they've been functioning now for since 1999. And they established, the numbers have grown. I don't know what the numbers are now, but it's more. It's considerably more. The numbers are still fairly low because indoctrination and colonization is a powerful thing. You know, in the initial years of the overthrow, they outlawed the speaking of the language.
Yep.
In fact, one of the people, Uncle Robert, where we're going to be reclaiming this land, he's 100% pure-blooded Hawaiian, which there's probably about 5,000 or 6,000 of them left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he remembers going to school where if you were caught speaking Hawaiian, they would whip your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
They'd tell you, put your fingers. This, you know, he's living. He's an older man, but he remembers. So what is that all about? I'm sorry. You
destroy the language, destroy the culture.
Exactly. And ultimately, it's genocide.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to wipe out an entire nationality is what you're trying to do. And ultimately, they did a fairly good job of colonizing, as is per usual. The process of colonization means that many of the oppressed adopt the culture of the oppressor because it's easier. It's the path of least resistance and so on and so forth.
Look at India.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole caste system is based off of that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the numbers will get bigger, but if you understand the law, their numbers are important. They will have to happen at some point. But more important right now is the basic principle of leadership by example. Those that understand who they are need to understand that they are who they are and act like they are who they are.
Yep.
And the others will come. But right now, you know, this is a big, big move. Over the years, there have been many laws. They amended their constitution. They updated it. The last one was 1887. They have an amended constitution of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
They've passed many laws. I've actually written two of the laws, and I served as a representative for a year back in 2006. And the two laws that I wrote, one was a law that bound the Hawaiian government to nonviolence except in the case of self-defense. And I did that very specifically to try to ward off any false flags that could be accused, you know, lay blame on them.
Yeah.
And the other law that I wrote, which was like, this is the big one, this is the big, big one, was to outlaw weapons of mass destruction in Hawaii.
Yeah, considering what a strategic point that is in the world, that's a pretty big one.
Big, and I know most people would say, oh yeah, come on, that's never going to – look at – you know, I don't think that way.
Mm.
The way of today is not the way of tomorrow. If you had talked about Israel – you know, 5 years ago, you know, experiencing a UN vote where it never would happen. No way.
No way.
No. So things are changing fast.
Yes.
Very.
And the whole idea is that the time to make the most amount of change is when things are changing systemically. You know, it's like that's why this whole group and stuff that I'm talking about is really to kind of get us moving towards doing you know, greater things, because there's going to be times where there's going to be so much flux in the universe or the world or something that, you know, small, successful, bright light will shine, you know, much harder and faster when everything's dark than it would be when, you know, all the lights are on. So, you're absolutely right. You need to push into this direction and do these kind of things. What are you guys doing for a banking system? Because I know with Rob's experience with Lakota, UN wouldn't recognize them unless they had their own set of laws, which you guys apparently have, their own money, and their own banking system. Have you guys talked about that or done that? Or
well, this is where I'm extremely excited. I don't know. I've been out of the process for a long time, but I'm very close to the prime minister. I mean, this is a really good man. He's a really, really good man. A really good man. And, you know, we're very close. You know, he trusts me very much. And I love and respect this man very much. So I don't know. And with the Minister of Foreign Affairs and virtually everyone in the government I'm very close to, they know me. They know what I've done. They know the film that I made. They know how much I have fought for this cause. So I don't know. I know they must have been doing some things with banking. I don't know where they stand, but I'm sure – that this is another move that they're very much ready to make. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think this is where I'm getting super excited, because what I have pitched to the Prime Minister is, look, let's set aside maybe a couple acres, a few acres of land out of 5,500. Mm-hmm. And let me get a crew together to start building these earth bag homes, because we can do this. Yeah. We can do this. Mm-hmm. We have a workforce. We can do this. We can afford to do this. Mm-hmm. And we start building homes, for guest accommodations and whatnot, where we can invite key people, you know, to come out and, like, here you go, we give you accommodation and we feed you, and, you know, you get to be part of this beautiful culture, and you know,
see how we can live without, you know, this craziness that we got set up in our own lives.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm telling you, Hawaiian aloha is legendary, man. Hawaiians are, you know, they're like the Palestinians, actually, the most hospitable, generous people you'll ever meet.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess that happens when, you know, especially with the Palestinians, when you have everything taken away, what else do you have left but your humanity? And if you don't, you know, express that, it's, you know.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, the blessings that will befall anyone that would come to this community, I don't know what to say. I've been part of my incredible blessings of life are directly attributed to the experience I've had with the Hawaiian community. And look at me now. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a half acre of land. You know how many white folk are getting a plot of land?
Yeah, probably zero beside you.
There's a few, but they're very, very, very few.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting a piece of land in Hawaii for nothing. And not only that, but I don't pay taxes on
the land. This land, 5,500 acres, like, where is it? What is it? Like, somebody's got to have some claim under the United States of whose it is. Like, how do you even decide what that is?
This is the land that it's in Kalapana or Puna district.
Is it a separate island, or is it?
It's part on Kalapana in Hawaii. It's the big island. There's eight main islands. The main island is Oahu. That's where you find Waikiki and Honolulu. Hawaii is the big island. That's the one with the volcano it's active all the time. It's pouring lava into the sea right now. Mm-hmm. But it's a gentle volcano. It's not like Mount St. Helens.
It kind of blubbers out instead of...
Yeah. It's a very powerful place, man. Hawaii is an incredible place. So that's the area where... But there's also an area in Maui.
So that's like the most... That's like the closest to the United States, right? Like in the positioning of Hawaii?
It is, yeah. It's the most east, yeah. It's south. It's the most southeast.
Yeah, I see. I'm just looking at Google Maps right now.
Yeah, it's the big one. It's called Big Island.
Yeah, it looks like it's at the end of the road on one part of it, and then you got national parks surrounding it.
Yeah.
So, it's, like, who owns that? Like, you know, it's just sitting there?
This area, they didn't just pick any old area. I mean,
that's what I'm trying to get. Like, you know, this is Hawaii too. It's a, you know, relatively small island in probably one of the most beautiful parts of the world, and all of a sudden, 5,500 acres are free. Like, I can't even find that in, you know, Ohio.
It's land where there is no third party. That the land was transferred unlawfully and has been held unlawfully, and there's not been any other third parties involved. And the reason why they picked the land is for that very reason. So not only that, what they have is they have the actual markers. The part of the problem the Hawaiians have had is that although they know certain areas, they don't have the exact boundary markings and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And those records have been kept very secretively away. In Hawaii, it's pretty ridiculous. You know how you have to do a title search if you buy a property?
Yeah, yeah.
Every fucking title search in Hawaii is fraudulent.
Yeah.
Every fucking last one of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in a real verifiable way, keeping in mind that this was a fully sovereign, you know, established sovereign nation, mm-hmm. you know, ownership rights
were established. What was the population of Hawaii when all this happened? Like, how many people were living there at the time, or, like...
At the time of the overthrow, it was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of around, there were about 40,000 Hawaiians left. A century before, there was nearly a million. They nearly wiped out all of them with disease.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there was probably about 40,000. Those are the estimates in 1893, or in 1898, it was about 40,000. I don't know how many foreigners there were, but you know, it would have been a decent number. So yeah, it would have been a huge number at that time. So the land that they've chosen, they've actually got some of the key documents to establish this is our land. Mm-hmm. This is government land. You know, you want to say it's your land? Whose land? What, yeah, the U.S. government's land? Whose land are you saying it? This is our land. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other elements to this equation, but at the end of the day,
so we'll, cool. Like, I mean, it just kind of like plotting this through my mind. I mean, like with Lakota, like it seems, you know, totally understandable. I mean, it's obviously there was people living there ahead of the United States before all this happened. It was, you know, dominated by by the government and stolen and, you know, lied and, you know, all this stuff. And now it's like coming full circle that these little groups are coming back and being like, yeah, this is us, and we can, you know, establish this, and this illusion of power is going to fade, and it's going to fade permanently when the dollar collapses too. So,
yeah, and who knows, man? These things like this are going to hasten it. Maybe, I don't know. Either way, it you know, right is right, wrong is wrong. But I actually see this. I don't think I'm naive at all. You know,
I don't think anybody would claim that you're a naive guy after all the life experiences that you've had.
Yeah, I'm not naive. You know, yeah. I know what the possible moves are of the U.S., but I honestly believe that whatever move they make, other than just ignore it, which is what they've been doing.
Yeah, and I think they will probably do that in the long run. The only danger, you know, kind of doing game theory is that, you know, they pull the old, you know, end of Godfather, you know, false flag, nuke Iran, you know, wipe out you guys, you know, that type move where they could go full retard and just, you know, go nuts. But up until that point, there's no benefit, just like with the Lakota, there's no benefit in anything with you know, fighting them, because all that would do is make the big bad government lose faith or face of picking on indigenous populations that they've completely dominated for a past century, and yeah, you know, leave these poor people alone. I mean, you know, it's one thing for a guy like me who's American, who's complicit in putting, you know, playing into this debt and death paradigm, but for another heritage that's been brought to the brink of extinction, you know, destroyed their language, destroyed their values, destroyed their lands, destroyed their means of being able to support themselves, to take some sort of humanity back and just say, no, enough. I mean, Rob was describing the Lakota Indians. I mean, there's a 96% illiteracy rate, you know, the disease, the alcoholism. I mean, just a totally destroyed nation. And for them to even make the step towards declaring their sovereignty and establishing a free banking system. I mean, what a beautiful example of probably the you know, one of the most oppressed people on earth, just to go back and say enough, you know?
Yeah. Exactly, man. And I mean, you know,
and we all need to do that. We all need to say enough. I mean, whether that's why I try to tell people when you start awakening yourself, you have to start with getting rid of your toxic thoughts, get rid of the toxic people in your life, get rid of the toxic assets in your life, and get rid of your toxic path in your life. And the more, you know, I'm not saying that we can all do what you did and give up your citizenship and be, you know, traveling all the world and, you know, fighting all these battles, but there's the more that we're able to extricate ourselves and disempower it and more empower ourselves, the tide will shift with us, and more individuals that do it, you said before, start walking that path, and you give power and energy to other people to do the exact same thing. And it's really not that difficult. I mean, number one, the hardest battle is regaining your consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I think after that, after you start going through that process, it's like the means of controlling you and the means of your complicity and doing things that you know that you don't have to do anymore becomes less and less. And then at some point you're like, I really don't care. You know, like I don't work in your paradigm anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't know about you, man, but I'm seeing like a lot of stuff that's indicating that, you know, We do have December 21st coming, and I'm not in any way suggesting, you know, a switch is going to be flipped, and, you know, no. But there's a lot of energy around this date, you know, a lot of thoughts, you know, whether it's Armageddon or the dawning of a new age, yep. Aquarius, and you know, whatever. There's a lot around this date. And you know, some of it or all of it could be manipulated, whatever. The bottom line is that there is a shift going on. I think there's rapid, increasingly rapid change is happening. And I've thought for a long time, anyway, that it's coming to a head. It's going to come to a head, and we're whatever way we go, I can't say, but it's definitely coming to a head.
Yep, and I think like just from my like I really don't spend too much on like Mayan, you know, 2012, because I think that there was so much like just absolute sensational dribble out there. But the way the Mayans looked at time was through a quickening pattern, and like for I guess the easiest way for an American to see it. I try to say, hey, you know, there was an agricultural revolution that took humanity from one level of consciousness, being this kind of tribal, you know, ugh, you know, caveman type thing, into another level of consciousness, which we had to work with the land and be one with it, and be in order to live in one place and grow crops and domesticate animals, and that brought in a whole different level of consciousness, and humanity lived in that for thousands of years in that level of consciousness. And then what happened after that, we got into this kind of government kingdom domination of all these individual happy little things, and then we had this kind of idea of humanity dominating others, and you know, centralized religions and centralized power and stuff like that, and then that broke down with the Gutenberg press, and then the Industrial Revolution broke national sovereignty power down, and now the corporations become more powerful than even the governments, and you know, they had the Industrial Revolution, and all these revolutions are progressively getting smaller. So the Industrial Revolution lasts like 200 years, and then, you know, what's the next revolution that came after that? The Information Revolution. Now that, you know, information's speeding around the world at a faster pace, and, you know, geez, think about it. The first text was only done 20 years ago. Like, think about that. Like, only 20 years ago. Like, the time frames for all of these consciousness changes are happening at a quicker and quicker pace. And I think what the Mayans were predicting in their calendar was that at some point it comes to zero. And then what happens? Like, what, you know, they didn't say it's the end of the world, but it's the beginning of something else. And I can't help but to think that with the Information Revolution, the Industrial Revolution, the Agricultural Revolution, the you know, all these things coming to an end, we're at such a unique point in history where we can say, hey, 100 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to know what a Hegelian dialectic is, or, you know, a quantitary theory of money and false flag events. And now that we have all this information, it's like, why does humanity continue to live the way it does? Well, it does it because, you know, we've been accustomed to that. But as soon as this dollar collapse happens, you know, it's like all chips are off the puzzle. It's like you smash the thing, and it's like, what ends up, where's the centers of gravity that are going to bring all these pieces back together? And it's going to be, in my mind, a decentralized individuals doing what we do best, and it's going to bring us back down to a more local, responsive level. And that's why my big theory is not that we're going to have this one world government and, the Big Brother 1984 Alex Jones scary bullshit stuff. No, we're going to have massive decentralization of power. Yeah, there's going to be an anger phase where all of humanity is going to be upset that they can't get, you know, porn on their iPhone and pop popcorn with lasers out of it. Like, we're going to have an anger phase where people are going to be upset about it. But what happens after that? People, anger blows off. It's a very short but violent thing. And I think what will end up happening is we're going to have a lot of decentralized local, you know, whether it's Hawaiians or Palestinians, that are going to be freed from, you know, all this outside influence and manipulation. And people are going to say, hey, we need to, let's take care of ourselves. Let's take care of food. Let's have a means of transaction. And, you know, shit, how simple can life be?
Yeah, you know, where's our water supply? Okay, let's get that sorted. Okay, food. Who's growing food? Okay, we need to grow some food. The important things are going to become your focus. And all this external stuff is like, it's all an illusion anyway, isn't it?
And it's like, it takes so much energy, too.
The power.
It takes so much energy to support this illusion. I mean, think about it. I think the U.S. defense budget this year is like $700 billion. Just think about what $700 billion could do, you know? And what are we doing? Yeah. We're bullying ourselves around the world. Well, do we need to be doing that? Could we accomplish the exact same amount of transactions and wealth transfers and through friendly commerce? I mean, that's what the founding fathers, alliances with none and trade with all, or something along those lines. I mean, we can have a level of cooperation without this insanity of militarism and debt and all this stuff that empowers the worst in humanity. I mean, the very structure that we have, we're empowering literal psychopaths to dominate others.
Yeah.
Well, this is a 5-minute conversation that's already turned into a great call.
It is great, man. It is great. And what I'm really, really excited about is, you know, my proposal to the Prime Minister is, let's set aside some land. I know I can get volunteers together. I've already contacted a group that does workshops to teach people how to build these homes. Mm-hmm. And they have a program where if you can supply the land, you know, they'll send a team and, you know, we can do workshops and teach people. And all I need to do is get something like that set up or learn it myself. And, like, you know, we just start doing it and learn by doing. And if we get a workforce together, which is totally, totally doable, because we're talking about quite a few Hawaiians over there, mm-hmm. many of whom are unemployed. And if we get a workforce together, man, we can be building good quality homes very quickly. And if we have homes like I want, which is what I'm saying to the Prime Minister, look, let's build accommodation where we could invite key people, you know, volunteers, basically, who will come over here and we can put them up, we can feed them.
Yep.
And what do? They offer what it is they have to offer. And you're one of those people, man. Yeah. You're one of those people. You have a knowledge set and a foresight and a following of good quality people as well that is extremely valuable. Oh, extremely valuable. Totally funny. Complimentary.
It's funny.
So, this is what I'm looking at getting.
I didn't hang up on you.
I love it the way that happens.
Yeah, seriously, like, right at that. It's funny that.
Did you get you're one of those people?
Yeah. As soon as you got there, you're like, well, you're one of these people. Bling. But yeah, I mean, and it's funny, like, in I guess in the real world, this is all, I guess an outsider would say that this is two ridiculous men talking to each other. Like, the average person totally doesn't get what's going on or the possibilities of it happening. And when I started doing this ultimate exit strategy and silver investors and that, I mean, one of the things I said was that a government, you know, when you have this massive breakdown, is going to have a lot of land, and they're going to have a lot of unemployed people, and they're going to have, they're going to want solutions. And will they sell land for silver? I always gave the example of Utah, because Utah is currently suing the federal government to take back 40% of their land mass that's held under federal parks. Utah is going, you know, the federal government, you've had all this land, it's not producing anything for us, and we want it back. And they're actually suing the federal government. I don't know if it's a 2-year legal process or whatever, but, mm-hmm. and then I also give the example, Utah just passed that gold and silver are legal tender. So that's why I try to tell people, mm-hmm. you know, all these ounces of silver that we're having, we could literally buy our own state park, you know, it's no question who owned it or whatever. Or in this case, you know, geez, you got Hawaii with national people who are reclaiming their lands. There's total possibility of this type of stuff happening. Comes down to timing, though. There's a lot of, like, huge plans. Like, people come to me all the time, and I'm like, yes, that's like a $1 billion idea in this paradigm. But we cannot do anything until a dollar collapse, because we don't know the counterparty risk. We don't know what game set we're going to play with. And I don't want to, like, dedicate time and energy to something that is ultimately not, you know, feasible or something like that. It's about timing and stuff. But I'm super supportive of you and the Hawaiian Nationals. And if I have to get messages out for people to come out there and go do stuff, that's awesome. I want to help support anything that you guys do with that. And, you know, geez, it's not like you're trying to get people to go to Palestine. I mean, this is Hawaii. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a huge difference between, you know, the danger level and comfort level, I guess, there, too. So, yeah,
I'd say
that is really sweet, man.
I'll tell you what, man. Look, I'm going to be doing my thing with this. There's no doubt. I've got some other things going too. I'm actually heading. I'm heading to Iran. Actually, it looks like for sure. I've been invited.
Love causing trouble, man.
And I'm going to be meeting some very high level people out there as well. Yeah. Like very high.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know. Whatever the powers that be decide to do, whatever, that's their thing. I'm going to continue doing whatever I feel is right. It's served me well this far, and I'm committed to it. But.
And even with the Iranians, like, you know, it is all about this consciousness change. I mean, you know, if you look at the nations that are, I call them, and I did this back in my academy, I call them the anti-hegemon, because there are a lot of nations out there who are aligned, you know, economically, partially militarily, but definitely philosophically against, you know, the Anglo-American Empire. And it, you know, ranges everywhere from China to Russia to Venezuela to Iran to, you know, South Africa to India, Pakistan. Like, all these nations are saying, you know what, enough of this dollar paradigm, enough of this petrodollar, enough of your militarism,
yeah.
Like, enough. And
enough,
what are they doing? What are they doing? They're going around and befriending each other and integrating economically and trading with each other and making business easier, not more difficult, and buying up real assets. And that's where I think that the Anglo-Americans are sorely going to be left behind in history if they don't, you know, geez, if I was, you know, the Rothschilds and Rockefellers right now, I would be like, all right, guys, we have an unsustainable system. How about we just have a complete debt jubilee for everybody. Like, just free everybody of all that. We still own the media and the military and the Congress. Like, just start all over again. Man, what a great thing to kind of re-energize everybody. And yeah, we're still in our little fishbowl, but at least we got a better shot of swimming a little bit faster and farther.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to meet people in Iran, you know, God bless you, dude, because it's that kind of communication and reaching out and realizing that we have far more in common on a very, you know, emotional, spiritual, you know, level than any of the differences that we have. The Anglo-American Empire loves to, you know, divide and conquer. And the reality is, I guarantee I have much more in common with the average Iranian than any of the, you know, people that are in that, you know, claim that they rule me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, stupid is as stupid does. I mean, you know, one of the things that gives me is another sign to me that I just read about in the last couple of days. The UN or something called on Israel to open up its nuclear facilities to inspections.
Really? They don't have nuclear facilities, right?
Yeah, right. And, This is huge, you know. This is extremely, extremely damaging. A lot of people don't realize just how insane it is that we're sitting here flirting with the idea of attacking Iran, mm-hmm. a country which has not invaded or attacked another country for centuries.
Yeah, like 400 years, I think.
And its nuclear program is provably, because it's the most inspected fucking program hands down on the planet, mm-hmm. is provably not threatening. Whereas the nation that is saying it feels threatened by Iran is the most dangerous nation in the world, which has hundreds of nuclear weapons and has openly said they are willing to attack Europe and, in fact, destroy the world.
Yes.
Before they would allow themselves.
And for anybody who doubts that, Google Samson option.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
and throw in all the false flags that they've been behind and their assassinations and their targeting. I mean, they're insane. And what do you take from the latest Gaza thing? Because it really seemed like it flared up and then they put it to sleep real quick. Like,
that's another thing. I mean, I've read...
I see that as a sign of weakness on their part, where they're trying to do stuff, but they can't get anybody to do anything like they used to do.
Yeah, it appears like that is the case. Now, I have read some counter views, one in particular from a former, from an Israeli, you know, he's no longer Israeli, but he made the argument that this was a warm-up, that they were trying to figure out what exactly were Hamas's capabilities as far as their rockets were concerned, and now they know. Mm-hmm. And they also needed to know how many reservists they could call up. Because Netanyahu right now looks like a complete and total fucking coward. Mm-hmm. He, I mean, his whole support base is total psychopath, right-wing fucking nutcases.
Yeah.
And you know they'd like to nuke. I mean, fucking Sharon's son was saying we need to Hiroshima, Nagasaki, fucking Gaza.
Yeah.
And you know this is normal. You know, it's amazing as well. Like, wait till the American people. You want to go up and dig up some quotes from the Quran or some of the nutcase Islamic leaders? Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what. If you want a continuous flow mm-hmm. of psychopathic, racist fucking rants. Go ahead.
I would love to get you and Ann Bernhard together and just go at each other.
It's incredible, man. Yeah. I mean, the stuff they say is, I mean, some of it is so in your face.
Yeah.
A true Talmudic, you know, we are the chosen ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Goy.
Total racist. Yeah.
Our fingernail is worth more than all of them. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to, it is their duty to violate us, lie to us, enslave us. That's all we are, cattle. So, I mean, you know, wait till people get this shit now. But the fact that the UN has called on, and this is not being reported, but this is pretty amazing. The UN is calling on Israel to open up. Yeah, why the fuck aren't we inspecting Israel's nuclear program?
Mm-hmm.
Why? And you know, things like this are changing. If you ask me about Gaza, I'm inclined to think at this point, especially if there's not another attack before if they're – well, they're heating it up with Syria again. So
I saw a report that it said on the Drudge Report, Syria's loading sarin gas into their missiles.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, really.
They just telegraph that they're loading – that's not complete propaganda.
Yeah, of course. So, but go ahead. I to be honest with you, brother, for quite a long time, I've been like, you know what? Fucking do it, man. Go ahead. Go ahead. Fucking do your false flag and go ahead and kick off your third world war. Go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what.
That's the end of it.
For me anyway, like, I don't give shit because I'm a spiritual. I know that the spirit will move on. I'm not afraid of it. It's not a problem for me. Fine. Go ahead. Do it. But if you fail and you don't all get to run into your goddamn underground compounds and this thing doesn't go to plan and some dominoes start to fall, people who are in the know about who you really are, who's pulling the strings behind these puppet fucks who've been marching to your orders, if that happens, oh, good luck to you, motherfucker.
Yep.
Fuck, lamppost, hanging from a lamppost will be the best option for you.
Yep.
And I really firmly believe that they know this. They know
that's
this.
Why,
and
that's why they have to put up this big front. You know, the psychopath fears two things. They fear exposure and the greater psychopath.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all they fear.
And they are fear-based. They're all about fear. Despite the projections of power and whatnot, they're amongst the most cowardly, fearful fucking people on the planet. They have no goddamn courage at all.
Nope.
It's all false. It's all and the Israelis are a perfect example of this, by the way. And the experience I had on that ship, on the Mavi Marmara, really exemplified this. You know, you take these Israeli commandos. You're talking about the Navy SEALs of the Israeli military.
The best of the best.
The best of the best. And when we disarm them, I'm telling you, man, when they were in there on that ship and we had disarmed them, I specifically went up to them, the three of them, and went and really looked right into their eyes, And I can tell you, they were scared shitless, man. There was no fucking bravado, no nothing. And I know for a fact that there are people, especially a lot of Muslims and a few Americans are the same, like the Israelis. You're all fucking bravado, and I know there is a decent amount of bravado.
Sure.
But when you strip away all that big bad military air power and everything behind us, we're cowards compared to these people. The things that they're doing, that they're fighting, you ain't got no goddamn air power behind you, man. You know you're dead.
Yeah.
As soon as you get exposed, you're fucking dead. You know? and they do it. They fight. They're ready to die. No
yeah.
problem.
Yeah.
If you take
well, see, the that's the thing with this collapse, and you know, I think that, you know, like I said. I think in one of my videos that you know, the real power that's the unfortunate part of this paradigm is that the real power, we don't really see their face. Like, you know, Netanyahu and Obama and Hillary, like they're just fucking puppets for the big masters. And you know, you get the guys like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and you know, all these big guys out there. They're going to continue to do business and move along and put up different puppets, but they're going to sacrifice the current puppets because they have to go. You know, it's far better to sacrifice your bishop and your rook than it is the king and queen. And that's the ultimate, you know, sick part of all of this. These guys that think that they're, you know, the kingmakers, the Jamie Dimons and, you know, Petraeus and all these, like, wannabe lords, they're disposable, and they're going to go down when the ship goes down, and it's going to be too late for any one of them to do, forgive me, you know, for that, because it's going to be too late. And it's far better for people to just walk away now, and while they have the chance, and while it's a conscious decision on their part instead of having the decision made for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it. I mean, these individuals, I really do hesitate in calling them human. I honestly don't know. I'm not willing to say that I know
well,
that
in
these
in order people... to have humanity, you have to have empathy, and psychopaths don't have empathy.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody makes fun of David Icke because he says lizard people, but he's probably not that far off because reptilian, you know, I'm not saying that they're lizard people, but they have no emotion. They're cold-blooded creatures. And that's what a psychopath is. They have no remorse. They have no empathy. They have no love. And they live in a you know, a fear-based mentality of you know, eat or die. And I think getting back to this Mayan thing, this conscious revolution is going to come to a point where, man, if humanity were to, one of the interviewers asked me this question. He said, if you were God for one day and you had one power, what would you do? And I've never been asked that, so I never thought about that. And I said, you know what, if I could do one thing is to have humanity identify psychopaths and shun them. Because I think all of our problems would be solved if we just identified the psychopaths in our lives and disempowered them and disenfranchised them. Because inevitably, they're parasites. They cannot produce. They cannot cooperate. They cannot provide value. And they would literally die off like cancer. And I think if every individual at least did that one thing, forget about, you know, getting out of the stock market and prepping and you know, all this fucking shit. If they just got rid of the psychopaths in their lives and disempowered themselves and as a result, empower themselves, because without somebody spewing toxic bullshit in your thoughts, we probably would resonate at a higher frequency and love each other more, you know, without somebody constantly putting you down. So that's what I think, that maybe this, what this consciousness shift is that the psychopaths go full retard, go absolute crazy, and humanity goes, enough, 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 I'm done with this. This isn't what I signed up for. You guys were insane enough. You crept along with your, you know, progressive insanity with regulations and control and domination of each. And it crept up on us over a couple generations, but we now see what's in front of us, and we're now rejecting it. And how wonderful would that be if that just, you know, and not saying December 21st is going to happen like that, but wouldn't it be awesome if just humanity said enough?
Yeah, I love the way you speak, man. I think that's an absolutely beautiful way to put it, and I think that very scenario is likely to play out, because you know, as you say, you know, you sacrifice your bishop and whatnot, you know, you don't sacrifice your king and your queen. These pawns, many of them, probably most of them, are either so mind controlled or so compromised that there's no way, there's no turning back.
Yeah,
for them.
And I don't think people truly appreciate the compromised part of that. I mean, look at Barack Obama. Okay, here's a guy. Okay, who let's be honest here. I mean, he's you know, an African American from Chicago. He was running for a Senate position as, I don't even know what he was before. It's some like city yeah. controller stuff. Running for against a six-term Senate seat guy. I forget the guy's name. Ryan, Paul, Tim Ryan, one of the Ryan something. This yeah. guy was unbeatable. You know,
yeah.
but, you know, he had the Hollywood wife. He was in the Senate for six terms. Like no one could beat him. And then what? 2 months before that. He has got a sex scandal and has to pull out. And now Obama's a senator. He's in the Senate for what? A few months, and he starts his presidential bid. Like, come on, folks. This guy's got some, you know, deep dark secrets against him. And then let's look at Bill Clinton. You know, yeah. poor Arkansas guy, and then gets picked up by Rhodes Scholars, and you know, gets all the. Come on, this does not happen like that. Meanwhile, yeah. you get guys like Ron Paul who've been in this Congress for 40 years and can't even get onto debates and much like has done so much and in the road's so difficult for him. So anybody who rises to power in this day and age has either been bought off, compromised, or an absolute psychopath.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And this is the inherent nature of the system that we've created. When you afford a small group of individuals to control the issuance of money, then basically everything and anyone who can be bought will be bought by that group of people, especially when they're psychopaths. So what we have is a world which is literally upside down. So instead of having people with honor and integrity filling those positions of public trust, which are of vital importance to all of us, we have the exact opposite. We have the most corrupt and servile. And those are the people that gravitate to the top.
Yep.
And ultimately,
that's the line that I used. Everybody says it's power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I said no, yeah. it's the yeah. corrupt that seek power.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I agree with you again because look, a lot of people will say it's human nature. You know, bullshit, man, bullshit. We reward corruption.
See,
that's the world we have. If we rewarded virtuosity, if we rewarded honor, if we rewarded wisdom, what kind of world would we have? But we don't. We have a system that rewards the opposite of that and suppresses wisdom, suppresses honor.
See, so people,
that's why a guy like me, it's so perfect. A guy like me gets arrested for fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Fraud. Yeah.
but that's the thing. That's kind of one of the things that go, you know, it's human nature for us to be like that, and I gave the example, you know, right now we're enabling the predators to feast off of that, and the reality is nature has far more examples of cooperation. I mean, on millions of times more levels of cooperation and resonating and working together than any of this predator mentality. Like we think, oh. You know, it's animal nature for predator and prey, and we, you know, classify yeah. people as sheep and them as wolves and stuff like that. And yet the reality is, in nature, God, I mean, think about just even our digestive system, how it protects and balances, you know, viruses. And, I mean, we could have died 40 million times, and then, you know, here we are on Earth in a thin layer of oxygen, you know, spinning around a planet, like... All these things always have to work together, you know, or the rain cycle, the you know, the energy, the solar flare. Like, it's insane that we're actually alive, but it works because it all cooperates together. And that's yeah. that's the way humanity's living is not in tune with that. And I think that we can get back into a cooperative, you know, higher language. I don't even, like, I literally feel like I don't have the language to properly describe how humanity should be living. I just know damn well that this isn't it.
Well, that's, you know, and there you go. There's another aspect of control right there. The English language, you know, those that have studied language and whatnot will tell you that the nature of the language itself is inherently flawed. It doesn't allow... And actually, I know this on an intuitive level. One of the things that my wife said to me, which is just like, it was such a profound thing she said to me. It was in at the end of a weekend of, like, you know, partying, and, you know, there were ecstasy and all this sort of stuff. So it was the come down after the, like, you know, the dancing, partying, drug thing. And we were sitting there smoking a joint or something, and we were talking, and she said, you know, everything went wrong when we started talking. And I just, like, I knew, like, when she said it, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, non-humans communicate all the time. And you can communicate if you think about it, the most profound things that we communicate are not the verbal things. In fact, most of the verbal communication is very nuanced with body language and what's really behind it. Oftentimes what's being said and what's actually meant are two very different things. And that's, you know, in order to understand people, you really have to try and see the whole thing, not just listen. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, I agree. You know, we have the ability, I think, when we were so-called primitive not so long ago, that we actually did speak probably telepathically, that we could understand each other, and probably not even in physical proximity, we could understand each other from different parts of the planet or long distances away. Why wouldn't that be possible? Why wouldn't we be able to emit sound, thought waves, energy patterns, and have other people receive them? If we're on the same wavelength, why couldn't we do that? Yeah. Other creatures do that. So this language thing, the English language in particular, is a real manipulation. Never mind the obvious things like the word terrorism, you know, or democracy,
assault,
you know,
rifle,
yeah,
junk silver. Those are my favorites. No, wow, like when you said that, you know, everything went wrong as soon as we spoke, you know, and coming from a guy who talks all the time, wow, what a profound statement, because it's so true. Like, you know, even, you know, and it's progressively getting worse because people are now texting. I mean, the language destruction's even going even further than that, to the point where, you know, texting is, like, horrible. And then you got, you know, above that you get emails, and geez, I can't tell you how many times I've written an email and then said, well, that didn't come off right, or you're going back in an email chain back and forth and it doesn't come out right, and then a phone call. But whenever I have a Skype conversation where I can actually see somebody, you know, are they paying attention, or like, it's the you know, 90% of our communication is nonverbal. And you're right. Yeah. You wonder, you know, maybe I'm getting way too deep and off thing, but you wonder if humanity didn't focus so much on talking and actually doing and actually being and actually, you know, being around somebody. I mean, what levels of, you know, love and kindness and communication would you have? And you're right. I mean, geez, the English language of all languages to be learning is, I mean, it's the language of thought control. I mean, the, you know, 1984 and, you know, the Queen's higher court, like, everything is geared towards, you know, total domination. And, you know, that you're absolutely right. That's a pretty profound statement. I'm going to give your wife a lot of credit for that one.
I already was in love with her at that point, but I mean, this was like one of the fairly early days, and it was like, wow, you know, I knew, like, when she said that, yeah, you're absolutely fucking right. And part of the reason why I knew that was because, like, you know, when I rescued nearly 50 green sea turtles myself, you know, this is like phenomenal, man. I mean, every turtle I was ever told about, I found, and you know, I never let one go. Always, every single one I ever saw or was told about, I got every single one of them. And I mean, I saved a lot of their lives. And I know the reason why I was able to do that was nonverbal communication, which it mostly was just the energy, the aura, you know, that I was able to get close enough to these creatures to be able to get hold of them. And although they didn't willingly all swim up into my arms,
yeah.
One or two kind of did, actually, yeah. But most of them, you know, there was only one or two. There was one I called Speedy Gonzalez. I had to go after him several times over a couple of different days, and I did all my best techniques trying to get close to him to get him, and I could not get him, and I had to finally, after pursuing him for a long, long time, I finally managed to get close enough to grab that little guy, and I got him, and we removed the line, and he was gone. But, you know, every other one, it was much easier for me, and mostly that was nonverbal communication. It was just an energy, you know, and if you communicate that way, and I do that all the time with non-humans, all the time. I don't have problems with non-humans. I mean, I've swam with sharks. I've dealt with dogs that were a little bit angry and a little bit, you know, sketchy, all sorts of stuff. And the communication, nonverbal communication, is incredibly powerful.
Well, I use the word resonate a lot of times, and when I first started using it, I just really meant, like, you know, I get you, you know, I'm in tune with you. And, you know, people, the more you think about it, we do send off energy. I mean, every single person, I mean, I've been in rooms with, like, toxic people. I cannot physically be in the room with them because of the energy that they put out. And I can just feel myself going, I can't stand being here. Like, you know, you feel that. So, I mean, listen, I want to say one thing. I know me 3 years ago would have listened to this conversation and been like, these guys are off the deep end. But I can tell you, the further you go down these things, you have to keep yourself open to thinking on this level and at least saying there's a possibility that, you know, what you're talking about, what I'm talking about, it's possible, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe we just don't have, you know, our minds are so clouded with, you know, all this electronic info, you know, I mean, geez, you know, I watch videos and video games and TV, and, you know, how does all that energy just fuddle up the system where you don't know what your mind would be like if you were just alone for a week and, you know, in the wilderness, just, you know, at peace? Yeah. And how do you not become more in tuned and maybe feel the weather changing and knowing what's going to happen and, you know, feel somebody near you when they're not even there? And, you know, all these things are I definitely think are real possibilities, and maybe I'm not the guy to be talking about it, but I'm interested in it. I get the ideas, and I know that there is a better way of living, and to me, being more empathetic, more loving, more caring, more communicative, like, these are all things that go in that direction.
For sure. For sure. And you know, going back to what you were saying about being in a room, you know, how you can't do it. That's what I've realized, actually, about London, about the UK, is that, you know, I can't do this. You know, I mean, I think back on it now, and I realize, like, wow, I've done well to maintain my sanity. You know, this place has gotten kind of the better of me at times, you know, not to the point where I turned into some sort of monster or anything, but my attitude and my demeanor has not been as constructive as it could have been. And I'm not making excuses. I'm just recognizing the fact that the energy that is around me has an impact on me.
Absolutely. How can it not?
Absolutely. And that's what I realized when I landed in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that there is, you know,
the
Pacific Command and, you know, all the branches of the military and everything, despite all that, the energy of that place, what it really is, and the impact it had on me was like, this is my home, man.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Of course.
Yeah.
So I'm back. You know, I'm coming back. And ultimately, like, to be around, and I'm finally, my wife, you know, the reason I've got this hat on is it's freezing in here. We don't have like heating really properly, and we have to use these little heaters, and they're very expensive, so you have to try and keep it down. But you know, our kids are like, you know, we have to bundle them up in the house and all this sort of shit, and like, yeah, you know, we go outside and like, I have like fucking five layers on, and I've been really, she's been like committed to a refurbishment of this house and like some work that she's doing for her mom. And, you know, she's been supporting us largely for a long time, you know, for quite a long time. And so she feels this real kind of, you know, commitment to her. But she's finally, I've been on her and on her and on her, like, look, babe, we don't need to be in this place where it costs so much more to live.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, fuck, it's freezing cold in the winter.
Yeah. And who are you surrounded by? And
surrounded by all of this madness. Yeah. And me, I've been arrested by the fucking police. They've come into my home, stolen our property, you know, I'm getting slandered, fucking, you know, all this sort of, why are
walk
we here?
Away. You gotta take my advice and just walk away. You know, you empower people who you pay attention to, and it's the same thing with societies and, you know, cities and neighborhoods and all that other stuff. And the more good people walk away from sick situations, the better off all of us are going to be.
I agree with that, and I've heard you talk about, you know, toxic relationships. And my relationship, not toxic at all, but one thing is for sure, like, my wife does realize, like, I'm leaving, you know, I'm leaving. And now I've been, you know, we've been set to, like, okay, you know, we're going to be apart for, you know, if everything goes well, it's going to be at least 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I've been making plans to do some other stuff, including some travel and all sorts of stuff. But I've been telling her all along, like, look, babe, you know, this is not my choice. And I don't know, you know, I don't take it for granted that I'm going to be around and that I'm going to see my kids and I mean, when we say goodbye, especially this time, I mean, you never know. That could be it.
Yeah.
And if something happens to me or something happens to you, I mean, you know, hey, let's not worry about the one who's passed. They're all right. Mm-hmm. Let's not be silly about it. Have the grieving period and so on and so forth. But I don't take it for granted. I am not taking it for granted that you're going to be here 6 months down the road or that I'm going to be here. So when I say goodbye, you know, it will be with a heavy heart, mm-hmm. knowing that I'm leaving my two children and the woman I love, but I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it. You know, I'm definitely doing it. I've had it. Not being here. No more. But and you know, as fate would have it, the contractors who were doing the work on this place and her mom's place and whatnot, they're fucking them over. Mm-hmm. And basically, they've done the work half. The classic,
half-assed, yeah.
Do it halfway. Oh, we're out. Yeah. Gonna have to leave it. Oh well, but if you give us more money, right.
Yeah.
And I've been really telling her, like, babe, you fucking kidding me, right? So you're going to stay here indefinitely and let these fucking fraudsters keep you here in this freezing cold fucking house where you have to bundle up our children just to keep fucking place.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I've got land. I've got a place in Hawaii, and we could be with our kids playing on the beach every fucking day.
Exactly.
You're going to stay here for this.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you what, a few months ago or a year ago,
a dollar collapse scenario, where you are is completely like whatever she thinks is holding her there is not going to keep doing it because it'll be too dangerous or whatever. And
I mean, but the beauty of this is that, you know, we have had like some real arguments about this, and my attitude has not been great at all quite a bit over this. But I've slowly but surely I've reached a point, although we're still, it is upsetting to me. I've reached the point where I'm not going to fight about it, and I accept the fact that you're not going to do this, and I think it's stupid, and I think, you know, it's hurtful, quite frankly. But fuck it, you know, what can I do? I mean, you know, but it looks like the way it's happening is one. The good thing is that I've slowly but surely been able to, like, instead of getting bitter about it, I'm getting better about it. You know, I'm getting better about, listen, I can't control that. You know, I realize she has every right. I have not been the breadwinner. I have not been there emotionally.
No,
I've
all you've definitely not won any Husband of the Year awards with all your ventures.
Exactly. You know, what I have given is a beautiful thing in the bigger picture, but in the micro picture.
Yeah.
Fuck, dude. You know, I can't be bitter about that. I understand where she's coming from, but anyway, as it appears, you know, she's getting like really close to realizing, like, okay, yeah, I will come with you in January, and like we'll build a home together, and you know what, that we'll be in a community where, guess what?
Yeah, we're the honest thing is, you bring her there. I mean, how do you leave?
Well, this is the one other element about it is that the citizenship, the kids and her have British citizenship. I can get American, and I'm gonna have to do this.
Oh, boy.
I guess this is the reason why the motherfuckers refuse to accept my renunciation, huh?
I'm back.
Yeah, fine. I'm a U.S. citizen. Fine, my kids are too. Fucking give me the papers.
And I'm married, by the way.
Yeah, so that's all going to be done. But either way, you know, I'm really, really optimistic about things, and I accept, you know, if things don't go well. I mean, you know, that could have problems too. But if things go the way I think they're going to go, brother, I have a huge, huge thing coming up for the government. You know, what I'm doing with the prime minister and whatnot, potentially massive, massive, massive. If that goes the way I'd like it to go. This project that I proposed to the prime minister, either way, I think he's going to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
If things go well, I'm going to have like a really proper recording broadcasting studio, built in Hawaii.
You mean not my iMac with a Skype headphone?
I want the same kind of capabilities as you know, the big guys, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do it intelligently these days. I mean, you don't need to spend a mint to be able to broadcast something that looks as good as Al Jazeera or BBC.
Yep.
You don't. You just need to be intelligent about it.
Yep.
And what we really need is quality people who know how to deliver a message. And, you know, I'm one of those people. Yeah. I can definitely do that. You're one of those people as well. You're genuine, you're articulate, and you do resonate, obviously, with important people. Mm-hmm. People who I won't resonate with as much. You know, and this is part of the project that I have foreseen, is that having people from different backgrounds appeal to different segments of the population, but can cross those bridges and build those bridges, because that's what we need. We need people to realize, like, we need that normal American Joe who's been brainwashed on all sorts of rubbish about Muslims. Check this out. Yeah. Muslims are not what you've been told they are. They're not. They don't care about your freedom. In fact, they want the same thing you do in virtually every way. And if you're a Christian, by the way, they worship the same exact God you do. And by their religion, it requires them to respect you. That is a Muslim. A Muslim who doesn't practice respect for a Christian is not a Muslim. That is a false Muslim. So, you know, let's cross these bridges. I know Muslims. I know people from different segments of the population who can resonate on different levels. Max Egan, you know, who's like got a really great connection with so many different people around the world. Yeah. This is what I want. I want to build the facility. So I'm not even asking anything of you right now. I'm just I'm planting the seed, and I'm telling you that if I have my way, I'm going to have these facilities together. And at that point, my goal is to have the ability to be able to say, Chris, I have a place. Here's pictures of it. Mm-hmm. And you can come and you can stay in that place. I don't really ask for anything in particular. All I ask for is that you do what you do, but we do it together. We collaborate together. We have the facilities to be able to amplify your message. And we could allow you to do exactly what you're doing right now on your own time, and just give us some time. We can collaborate as well.
Yeah.
I mean, And
that's what all this is all about, is just individuals working together. And I think that one of the best parts about, you know, like the group that we're putting together, is that we are from all different walks of life. And, you know, but we need to at some point, and again, it's all about timing and figuring out when's the right time to move and do stuff. You know, that there is going to be tremendous opportunities. And geez, if it's in Hawaii, great. You know, because it one of the things about knowing about where things are going, the Anglo-American Empire is not going to do well. So, you know, there's going to be a setback. So maybe the United States isn't the best place to be. But I also don't want to be an American overseas when everything collapses, because the rest of the world's really going to hate any American that's out there. And you don't want to be that gringo in South America when, you know, the dollar collapses and all of a sudden you're broke, and all the domestic, you know, all the indigenous people say, you know what, here's for 500 years of, you know, whatever. But, you know, maybe Hawaii could be a kind of, you know, place. But, you know, I also have that thing. It's like in the middle of the ocean, you know, like, I don't know. I guess I'd have to be there for a certain amount of time. But.
Well, if nothing else, what we will have the capacity to do is say, hey, come out to Hawaii for a month. You know, come on out, and here, we got a place for you to stay.
Yeah,
and we'll do some collaboration.
Well,
you
just
know,
like I said about your wife, you know, once you go there, it's the going home. You know, how do you go home? You know, if you know that you can make it there, you can do stuff there, it's difficult to go back to. I was just talking about Cleveland with, you know, February overcast and cold, and you in London, the same thing. It's like, why do we live where we live? So, well, my friend, this has been a really good 5-minute conversation that we had. As usual, every time I talk to you, we always go long. It's because we resonate with each other. I really respect all your energy that you do. I think you're one of the most ballsiest men that I've ever met in my life, especially if you pull off going to Iran. that's great on you. Keep spreading your message of love and understanding with everybody. And, you know, we'll catch up in another month or two and, you know, see what happens, you know, down the road. But I really enjoyed talking with you again. And, you know, geez, great.
totally mutual, my brother. Really, nothing but mutual respect, honestly. So, yeah, hey, if you have any news or anything, you can call me anytime.
Absolutely.
But I will be in touch, and, you know, I'll do everything I can on my end to make this idea a reality. Yeah.
All right. Take care, my brother.
You too. You too, my brother. Take care.